And we're going to continue with more of your stories, your ghost stories, and your strange stories as well. If you're driving, look in your rear view mirror. Do you see any eyes looking back at you? To me, that's one of the freakiest things. I mean, it's never happened to me. Never. But I think about it a lot because, you know, when you adjust the mirror, you just think that there's something back there. It's kind of freaky. You truck drivers probably know exactly what I'm talking about. Anyways, we'll come back in a moment with more of your calls on Ghost to Ghost AM.
Hi there, it's Nick Pope, former British government UFO investigator. I'd like to wish you all a happy Halloween.
Nick Pope, one of the great guests of all times, by the way. Welcome back to Ghost, our annual tradition here. Let's go to the phones. David in New Mexico. Dave, thanks for holding so long. Go ahead.
I've been holding for about 30 years now. Started listening to Art Bell back in the mid-'80s, late-'80s, and I've been calling now and then ever since, and tonight's the first night that I ever got through. I did talk to you briefly on your chat, your insiders chat.
Yes, tonight, but, I remember that.
And I email you from time to time. You've dredged up a lot of memories for me tonight. You mentioned, first of all, I was in Minneapolis when you were there. That's where I grew up. And then I followed you to St. Louis. I was flying for an airline there. And you mentioned Mickey Mantle. I had a ghost story, but these memories are pretty important.
Oh, we'll do the ghost story. You waited long enough, but yeah, tell me about your memories.
Yeah, Mickey Mantle. When I was in St. Louis flying for the airline, a pilot I was flying with 1 month was last name was Berra. He was the nephew of Yogi Berra.
Oh.
And on one particular day, we on the airplane next to us, our company airplane buddies were flying Mickey Mantle. He was going to Marion, Illinois, I think it was, to sign some autographs. And then on our airplane, Ozzie Smith comes up in the cockpit and talks to us.
What a great guy.
Yeah. Ozzie was a really nice guy, really nice guy. And
By the way, Willie McCovey from the Giants just died.
I heard that.
Halloween.
I read about that today. That's a sad deal.
Great baseball player.
Yeah. Yeah, and earlier in your program, you were mentioning an unnamed actor from Better Call Saul. I live in Albuquerque here. I was in the pilot of Breaking Bad. I never met that guy, but I was in the. You can see me in the pilot of Breaking Bad.
That's cool. I got Tom addicted to that, David, and he would watch when he'd get home, and he would tell me that he would watch 5 episodes. He couldn't stop. He just had to keep watching them.
Yeah, and but anyway, ghost story. This goes back actually to when I discovered Art Bell in the 80s, and I had some friends in Cody, Wyoming, and I was driving out there from Minnesota to go hunting out there, do some elk hunting, and did that. And on the way back, it was actually the day before Halloween, so like last night. And I got up early in the morning. I had to drive from Cody, Wyoming to Brookings, South Dakota in one shot. So I left as the sun was coming up. And you head east, 100 miles, 150 miles or so, hit the Bighorn Mountains, and they just jut straight up. And it was still about, 8 in the morning when I started heading up the Bighorn Mountains, up over the top, and then headed down the other side of it, on the east side of it, and it was a really pretty day. It had snowed a couple days before, 2 days before, and there was a cloud deck below me, and so I was above the clouds, and that deck went out about 20 miles, and then you could see land again. It was just spectacular, still, crisp, beautiful morning, so I decided to take a break from driving for a few minutes. And I was coming down the mountain looking for a turnout to pull out and stretch my legs. And it's a pretty steep downhill. And I saw a turnout coming up and I would shoot past it. And because I was going a little bit too fast, even though I wasn't speeding, it was just a steep downhill. And so I'd look for the next one. And, And then I would miss that one, and then it happened like 3, 4, even 6 times. I missed like 6 different turnouts over like 4 or 5 miles, and it was kind of perplexing to me that that was happening. And then finally I slowed way down to like 30 miles an hour, so I would be sure not to miss the next one. And so I pulled out and parked the car, got out, and there was a big boulder that had a good overlook of the scene that I described. I sat on that rock there for about 15, 20 minutes, just taking in the scenery. And then I was, I felt like, okay, time to go. And I got this strong impulse that no, I don't go. I want to, go down and go for a walk before you go down in the, yeah, in the forest below you. And then it was like arguing with myself, like, no, I got to get going. But then I would argue to the side, no, I want to go for a walk. And I started to feel this, it was a psychic pulling. It was a compulsion to absolutely go for that walk down in the woods. And it was also, I felt like and this was all psychic. There was nothing physical going on, but it was such a strong feeling that I felt I was being pulled by the collar of my jacket to go down the mountain.
For some reason.
Yeah. And so finally I yielded to it, and I started walking down exactly where I wanted to go for a little walk, and I walk a little further and a little further. I'm about a couple hundred yards down into the trees, or 100 yards or so, and I notice what seems to be an old car down in the trees down there. And at first it was like, what's that doing down there? And then I explained it to myself. I thought, being not too far out of high school myself, I figured some kids took an old car and for the fun of it rolled it off the side of the mountain, because it was a pretty steep drop there. And so I walk towards the car, and then all of a sudden I start to notice that the paint on the car is pretty new. It's pretty shiny. It was like, that was kind of odd. And so I kept going, and I got within, like 30 yards of the car or so. And all of a sudden, that's when the hairs on the back of my neck started to stand up. Like, this is a crash, and obviously nobody knows about it, or maybe they do. Well, actually, I remember having that thought that it was probably a crash that they cleared, 6 months or a year ago, and they just left the car there because it was so far down the mountain they couldn't get it out. But I got the hairs came up in the back of my neck. I started to walk toward the car and around a little bit, and then that feeling got really strong, and so I started intensely searching the ground. The snow had fallen like 2 days before and melted partially, so the ground was blotchy with snow, about 6 inches to a foot deep here and there. About half the ground was covered. And I'm looking, and then all of a sudden I see a human hand sticking out of one of the pieces of snow.
Oh.
And that's when it was all revealed to me. And so I inched closer, and I could tell that it was a girl about my age. I was in my 20s, and she was laying there frozen solid, half covered with snow. And,
oh, my God.
Yeah, and I looked in the car, and there was a baby seat in the back seat of the car.
Oh no.
And so I got that shot, and so what I did then is I left her, and I started doing kind of circles around the car, getting farther and farther out, and then kind of backtracked back up the mountain a ways to see if I was going to make some other discovery, which thankfully I didn't. And so I found her purse. She was laying right by the driver's side. The car had gone through the air about, probably 50, 60 yards through the air before it hit.
My God. How long do you think it had been out there?
Well, I know how long she had been out there because I took the, it was, she'd been there for, I found her that day, 2 days before is when that had happened.
A couple days then. Okay.
I took her purse. And I went down, I drove down the mountainside and into Sheridan, Wyoming, and Bill Long was the sheriff there at the time. I went right directly to the sheriff's department and went up to the counter, and I put her purse up on the counter and said to the lady at the counter there that I found this wreck and a car crash and this girl up there, and here's her purse and here's exactly where she is. And she goes, well, wait a minute, will you wait here? And I said, yeah. And she went talked to the sheriff, and he had me come back in his office, and he showed me a picture and said, does this look like her? And I said, yeah, that would be her. And he pointed down the hallway, just down the hallway, pacing. What he said that she, he said that's her father. He's been coming in.
God,
this morning.
David. Did you go up and talk to the father?
No, I didn't at that time. I didn't really have the heart to, and I was pretty young. If it happened today, I would. There would be some things that were different.
Sure.
But I was just a kid, and so. Anyway, the sheriff asked me, I was expecting just to give him a good map as to where this was, and he said, you could give us the best map in the world, and we could go right up there and
not, still not find it
at all. Yeah. So he talked me into going back up there with him, and this part was kind of funny. On the way up there, I told him he could drive as fast as he wanted. I was following behind him, so we're going down the interstate.
Oh, he didn't take you in his car?
Well, he would have, but they were. I had the foresight. I knew that they were going to stay up there for several hours, and
all right, that's a good point. You didn't want to stay up there all night.
Yeah, and so I followed him, and I said, I'm in a hurry. Feel free to go as fast as you want. So he was going. That was back when the speed limit was 55, and he's going 90, and I'm right on his tail. So here, everybody we passed, we got the sheriff going by him at 90, and me right on the tail of the sheriff in an old beater.
Yeah, what you're trying to figure out why you're following him, and were his lights on?
No, he's just running without lights. But I was chasing the sheriff at 90 miles an hour. And the saddest part is, turns out that this was not an accident. That this girl had killed herself.
Oh my God! How did they figure that out, David?
Well, the sheriff made the comment to me that she. The last that she was seen, she had had some sort of disagreement with her mother. They were at a bar having some drinks in what I believe is Sheridan, and they parted. And the mother made the comment to the sheriff that she told her not to do it, indicating that she planned to kill herself.
Planned to kill herself over the argument. God, what a story, though.
But it stuck with me. I've carried that girl with me all my life.
I bet. Is it haunting for you?
No, it's not. It's not haunting. It's sad. And I firmly, whether you can explain it by coincidence, or you can explain it by religion, or you can explain it by some other paranormal activity. But two times in my life, I've felt pulled like that. And there was definitely something going on. I explain it however you want, and so I've remained open to any further contact like that. But I feel strongly that it wasn't just a bunch of coincidences lined up. That there was some actual.
There was a reason. And by the way, who did you fly for when you were in St. Louis?
That was Air Midwest. We were flying for Ozark, and then when
sure.
CAA bought Ozark, then we were.
Did you know a pilot named Mel Burkhart? By any chance? He flew with he was with Ozark.
I was with Ozark Midwest Express. I was just a kid. We were flying the feeder services for Ozark in the Metroliner.
Okay, yeah, Mel was an old Navy veteran and a good guy. David, thank you so much for that story. Absolutely riveting. Jennifer's with us in Oceanside, California. Hi, Jen, go ahead.
Hi, George. So nice to talk to you tonight.
You too.
Well, this morning, actually.
And thank you for holding. How was your Halloween?
It was spectacular. Another day in paradise. In
I love it.
California. Yeah, it was great.
What's going on?
Well, I have had many ghostly encounters throughout my life, but the one that happened just a few months ago was probably the most poignant in my life.
All right, tell us.
I had a boyfriend at the time, and he was helping me move some VHS tapes to digital media so that we could, save them for the perpetuity.
That's smart. And we've all done that.
Right. It was about time. We've talked about it forever. He actually ordered everything that we needed. I had the one and only tape extender, because these were old tapes that I had purchased with the tapes at the time. So we're talking 15 to 20 years ago. We realized that this was a real hot item. You couldn't get it anymore. So it was important to have this extender. We worked on my project over a couple of weekends and got it all figured up. We put everything back in a box, because in a few months' time, we knew that we would do his family. tapes so that he could have them.
Sure.
A couple months goes by. We pull out. We're ready to do his tapes. It was a big weekend. He was going to present the tapes to his son the following week. And I went to the garage and pulled out the box, brought it in. We unloaded it, and we looked everywhere. The tape extender was gone. And we both looked at each other. I had passed this box myself. Everything that we needed was in there. And we started searching through the house. We went everywhere thinking for some reason it got out of the box. We went back into the garage. We looked several places. I don't have that many things, and everything is in a bin. I'm a little bit organized that way. So we came back out and sat on the couch. We tried, you know, we went to all other websites trying to figure out how to replace this extender. To no avail. We could not find it anywhere, and time was obviously running out. This was going to be the longest weekend of my life. As I sat there on the couch thinking, oh, God, I have ruined it for him. He's done all of this for me, and it's gone bad.
And you can't do anything now. You're stuck.
Nothing. We're totally stuck, you know, and it's not a good mood. So I sat there and I thought, oh, God, I just need some help, please. I need something. Show me something. Within a couple of minutes, as we were sitting on the couch, we turned the TV on just to try to ignore what had transpired. We heard a sudden crash in my garage, a loud bang. I immediately jumped up and ran out to the garage. There in the very center of my garage was the tape extender.
No.
How
did it get there?
I have no idea. No idea. I turned back to yell for my boyfriend. He was now standing at the garage door, and all I could do was point. I could barely speak. And I said, look, oh, my God, look. He looked down. He looked right past me. He looked over, and he said, well, where did it come from? And I said, you tell me where. I have no idea.
And where did it go?
Well, where exactly? Where did it go? Where did it go? I mean, we both were amazed. And the best part about it, George, is he's actually the one that introduced me to Coast to Coast. And because I felt so comfortable, you know, we'd had many conversations, and I never felt that he really got it or believed me. And I finally had my vindication. I said, so you tell me how that happened. I'll be glad to play along. He stood there for at least 10 or 15 minutes, walked around my house, called everybody he knew. It was an amazing moment for me.
I love it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jen. Great story. Enjoy your Halloween. One more text and tweet before the break. Tom, what do you have for us?
Dave in San Francisco says, Happy Halloween. I want to know two things.
David.
I want to know two things. One, your favorite scary movie, and two, the Halloween candy you got as a kid that you disliked the most.
I hated, and I still do, the little candies that look like corn.
Yeah.
What are they called, anyways?
Candy corn.
Candy corn, right? I hate those things.
Little orange and white.
I had a neighbor who would give you one. That
one?
Was it. He would drop one in the bag.
Unbelievable.
You'd look at it and crazy. My favorite scariest movie. I think when I was a kid, I saw the original House on the Haunted Hill.
Ooh, good one.
With Vincent Price. That was a scary one. Anyways, we're coming back with more on Ghost to Ghost. Hope you're enjoying it. I am. We'll be back.
From ghoulies and ghosties and long-leggedy beasties and things that go bump in the night, good Lord, deliver us. This is Ian Punnett, Coast to Coast host emeritus, reminding you that if prayers don't work, try throwing candy at them. And happy Halloween from Coast to Coast AM.
Good old Ian Punnett. You know, I filled in when I first started filling in on Coast to Coast, April 25th. 2001. It was a Sunday night, and I filled in for Ian Punnett. He took the night off. And gosh, it seems so long ago now, but I'm glad Ian's back with us. He's just been a great fixture of the program. And Dr. Ian Punnett, by the way, PhD. To the phones now we go. Jeff in Santa Rosa, California is with us. Hey, Jeff, happy Halloween to you.
Happy Halloween to you and everybody else. This is my first time calling in to Ghost to Ghost, so I talked to Tommy. He said he wanted the creepiest ghost story I got. I got a lot of them. But,
give me your best.
All right. Well, this one's kind of creepy. So if you got little children around, you might want to turn your radio down and give them some trick-or-treat candy.
Yeah, we don't want to scare the little ones, do we?
Well, not really. It's a ghost story, one of those campfire ones. I was visiting with some friends back in 1990 with a family reunion of theirs. I didn't know them real well, and they said, hey, you know, why don't you come along and just kind of hang out? So I went with them, and it was fine during the day. It was in Northern California at that time. And then it got to be later at night, and I could see that they were going to be up for a while, and it was time for me to cash it in for the night. So I said, hey, you know, I gotta lay out for the night here. So one of the gals piped up and said, well, you can use my old cabin. That's my old room. So I went, oh, okay. So cool. You know, out there in the Redwoods Creek nearby. So I went out there. There was no electricity in it. Laid down on the bed, just kind of relaxing a little bit, thinking about things. I just started getting some really creepy feelings. Just some really strange or weird feelings. So I said, you know, I can't even lay down on the bed. So I got up, sat down in the chair, and just kind of took stock of what I was feeling. And made a decision and went back into the house. And they were still around the kitchen table just talking, doing the family thing. And I finally got a chance to talk to them and say what was bugging me. And I said, you know, I think somebody died in that cabin and was killed and it's haunted. And there was dead silence. They all kind of looked at each other face to face. And then the people that I came down with, one of the gals piped up and she said, well, there were two guys in that cabin at one time, and they had a fight, and one of them killed the other one and cut his head off.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was like, I didn't quite know what to say. And I said, well, I don't know if I want to go back into that cabin or not. And nobody said anything, and I noticed that I was gradually getting ignored. So I went back outside, and there was a picnic table outside of it. I walked by the picnic table, and I could feel this guy just looking at me with his smug attitude, like, I could see him somewhat in my mind's eye, outlined in that with some details that stood out, but there was nothing there to see with my eyes. But I could tell he was looking at me. It's like somebody was right there. So I said, yeah, there is no way I am going back in this cabin.
I don't blame you.
No way, man. So I went back out to the car, and I slept out in the car until we left that area again. That was my bad.
You know what? I might have, Jeff, gotten in the car and just left.
Well, you know, I could have done that, but that would have been not real good.
Yeah,
that wouldn't have gone over well with the others.
Cut his head off.
Yeah, he just cut his head off.
Jeez.
The police were involved with it and everything, so for anybody who was wondering about it. But, like I said, I was real open-minded to knowing everything I could about ghosts. And that's the creepiest ghost story.
That is one creepy story, Jeffrey. Thank you so much. Hey, Jim Harold's with us, our ghostly podcaster. Hello, Mr. Harold. How are you?
I am doing fine, sir. What an honor to be on the institution that is Ghost to Ghost.
That's amazing. How was your Halloween?
Very good. We had a Facebook Live broadcast for 4 hours tonight, video.
Good for you.
We had a lot of fun. Your friend Micah Hanks.
Micah Hanks. I love the guy.
And Teresa, you just spoke with her. She was on. We had a lot of other great people, so had a good time and got the invite. And I said, hey, it's Halloween. I'm going to stay up all night to talk to George.
Isn't Facebook Live neat? When it works, it really works well, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's great. The interaction that we can do these days and get the real-time comments and everything and get the feedback and get the stories and everything, it's just opened up a whole new world. And Coast is, you know, you guys are pioneers in all of it. You're doing the YouTube channel. You're doing all the various things, constantly innovating. So it's an exciting time.
Jimmy, what's the weirdest thing that's ever happened to you?
Oh, geez.
That boggles your mind.
Well, the weirdest thing that happened is actually kind of a sweet story. Last year, I was on a paranormal cruise, and actually Rosemary was there as well. Rosemary
Ellen Guiley, sure.
And you just had her on. And we were speaking in this conference room, and I stepped out for a minute, and one of the cruisers with us was playing this crane machine, okay, that has, you got the claw, and you pick up the money. So anyway, I instantaneously thought of my late uncle who died a few years back. He was like a second dad to me. Loved the guy. And he loved to play those things like in Walmart or a drugstore, and he would spend $10 to get one of these little 99-cent toys from China. Boy, I wish he was here to
play. And those claws never gripped. I mean, things would always fall through them.
But anyway, so this woman walks up next to this guy, and she cups her hand to her mouth, and she says, John, John, calling out to her husband or whoever, guess what my uncle's name was?
John.
And that was to me, and it's not a, I've got a creepy story for you that didn't happen to me, but somebody else, but that was one of the weirdest things, because all the things that had to happen, George, all the synchronicities to make that work, I was convinced that was my uncle in a very strange way, reaching out to me and say, you're thinking of me, and I'm thinking of you.
Yeah, it could be. Jim, how do people find your podcast?
On all the major apps, iHeartRadio, of course, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and they can always go to jimherrold.com.
Super. And in the podcast search, what do they put in?
Just put in, they'd love the Campfire Show, because that's where we tell the spooky stories. Jim Harold's Campfire.
You got it,
put
Jim.
Put that in, and they'll find it right away.
Enjoy, my friend. Talk to you soon.
Thanks,
Jim Harold,
sir.
Great guy. Let's go to Laurel in Nashville, Ohio. Welcome to the program. Hi, Laurel.
Hi, George.
How are you?
I am great. What an honor. I was a bartender for 38 years, and you guys helped me unwind on the way home many nights.
I bet you know how to make any kind of drink.
Of course I do.
Let me throw a trivia question at you.
Sure.
What was the favorite drink of Frank Sinatra?
Was it a Manhattan?
It was a Jack Daniels that he would say, give me a two fingers.
Part of a Manhattan.
Two fingers, Jack Daniels, splash of water, and three cubes of ice.
Nice.
That's what he liked.
That's what I need right now.
That's what he liked. Anyways, you got a ghost story?
I sure do.
What do you have for us?
This happened when my son was just starting junior high school and making friends and doing sleepovers. And I live in a kind of rural place where, you know, you have to drive your children here and there. And a friend invited him to spend the night. And I said, sure. Drove him to this house, beautiful A-frame house, surrounded by 20 acres. The mother took me on a tour of the house. She was so proud of it. They had just moved in. And he spent the night, and that was it. A few weeks later, he said, Mom, can I spend the night again at Jimmy's house? And I said, sure. He goes, well, they don't live there anymore. I go, what do you mean they don't live there anymore? He said, I don't know. They moved. So I took him to this new house, which I was kind of familiar with. It was in my area. And the mom wasn't there, so I couldn't talk to her, but the dad waved. I dropped my son off, and that was it. A few weeks later, my son asked me if he could visit a amusement park, in it's a big amusement park in Ohio, with the family, and he had to spend the night because, you know, they had to get up early and go. Well, to my surprise, the next morning when my son was walking up the lane to our farm, and I'm like, "What? Why aren't you at the amusement park?" And he said, "They had to move. Somebody tried to strangle Jimmy in his sleep."
Oh, jeez.
And I looked at my son and my children's eyes. He had this red ligature mark around his neck, like somebody took a magic marker.
Oh.
And I said, "What happened?" And he didn't even know it was there.
An entity in his sleep tried to kill the guy.
At his little buddy, you know? And so, I mean, it was just crazy. So no more sleeping over at Jimmy's house, right?
No more.
A few years later, my two sons and I were sitting in a local Dairy Queen. And he said, that house right there is where Jimmy lives, right next door. Well, he sees him in the backyard, and we kind of made jokes. Hey, you want to go spend the night, blah, 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 you know?
Yeah, you remembered that.
Right. He goes, I'm going to go talk to him. So he went and talked to him and everything, and he came back. And literally 2 weeks later, I was driving down that road, and that house was gone.
What do you mean, gone?
Rubble. It was gone. There was no rubble. There was no sign that this big, beautiful house was ever there.
Like it just up and left.
It just up and left and became a parking lot in a small town that didn't need another parking lot.
Weird.
Yeah, it was so weird.
Was it ever there? What do you think? Maybe it was a figment of everybody's imagination.
Well, no, it was there because, you know, and I tried to ask people what happened to the house, and they just, you know, well, I come to find out that this boy's sister had an attachment, a ghost that followed them, and these poor people moved. And she, you know, was a big, she was a religious person, but this was just too big for them.
That's weird. But where would the house disappear to?
Well, it was knocked down for some reason.
You're sure somebody leveled it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was gone. It was leveled. It was gone.
Because I've heard some stories, Laurel, of houses that were just disappearing and nobody did anything to them. They were just gone. Hey, I've got a text or tweet from you, Tom. What do you have?
I gotta tell you, I don't get creeped out too much, but when I read this, it's kind of weird.
Uh-oh.
Carly from Tennessee, and you got a picture in your head. I'm a doctor. I was assisting an operation where we lost the patient. I have to tell you, I actually saw this guy's spirit leave his body. Wondering if you ever have seen the spirit of a person.
I have never seen a spirit of a person, but I've heard many stories that doctors or people who are at the deathbed of someone see something, the ectoplasm, something leave the body, and they've seen that. And there's a scientist who wanted to measure the weight of the soul, and he has determined that when you weigh somebody and then they die and you weigh them again, it's a few grams less.
No kidding.
You know, yes. Now, somebody could say something about liquids left the body or something, but he contends that's the weight of the soul.
Well, it's interesting when you meet somebody and you get a good feeling, like their good aura, their spirit, I call it. But
yep.
To actually picture a spirit leaving a dead person is...
All right, Tom will have another text or tweet next hour. And Mimi is in Midland, Texas. Hello, Mimi. Good morning.
Hi, George. Please pray because I have been through tremendous interference three times trying to get through and tell you this story.
Let's pray.
Yes. I have been. The whole time I've been on hold.
Going, please, phone, don't die on me.
Yes. I have a way of disposing of a Ouija that is effective.
How?
Okay, it is not burning like the usual.
That's the usual way.
Yes, I had a bad experience with it when I was 17, and like you, I implore people to not fool around with it. Anyway, the way to get rid of one, because they tend to come back.
Give it to your enemy. No, I'm kidding. Give it to your enemy. That's one way. Right?
Oh, no, I wouldn't do it even to my worst enemy. Preferably have some people with you, you know, to agree with you. Dig a hole as far down as you can have the strength to do it.
All right. Let's say you dig a 4-foot hole or something.
Yes. Fill it with water.
All right.
Pray, or whatever it is, you know, you believe, do it. I like to throw holy water and a medal in. I mean, I'm a good Catholic girl.
Sure. Just a little insurance policy.
Yes. And then cover it. Or if you're close to the ocean, go out to a deep part and dispose of it there.
Why does water seem to do something and hold it back?
I don't know. It's just the element that works with it.
How do you know it works? Did you do this?
Yes.
Oh, you did?
I don't know how I knew to do this. I can't remember how I learned to do this.
Where's the Ouija board now?
Buried.
I mean, close to your house, or where is it?
Well, we had to carry water, so it's not, you know.
It's a ways off.
As far as we could...
I'm wondering if anything grows on top of it or if it's all barren.
Oh, my goodness. I've never checked. I've never gone back there.
I don't blame you. Don't go back. Don't go back at all. We're going to come back in just a moment, though, with more ghost-to-ghost stories. So those of you on hold, we'll get to you. And those of you who are going to call, you might as well make it now. Tom will get you and put it on hold. We've got another hour to go of ghost-to-ghost right here on Coast to Coast AM. It is our tradition. And as we get rolling next week, I'm going to give you holiday updates. We're still going to be live for you on Thanksgiving and Christmas Eve, Christmas night, New Year's Eve, New Year's night. All of those days fall right in the middle of the week, so I'll be doing those shows for us live.